This is the story of Dracula, a creature who destroys all whom he touches. Dracula, the terrifying, the feared, who sleeps in the tombs of the dead by day and arises at night to inflict his terror upon the innocent and the unsuspecting.
You must help me. You must. You're my only hope. You must.
I'll help you. I promise.
Hi, my name is Matthew. I am the host, one of the hosts of the James Bond Complex. I am here with Edgar, also one of the hosts of the James Bond Complex.
I agree.
Usually we talk about James Bond and everything in between, but tonight...
Of all the
children of the night are making such sweet music. We are vampires because we're talking about the horror of Dracula. We're stretching. No, we're not stretching that much for this year.
Which, personally, I take offense to that title. I do not think anything we do as vampires is particularly horrifying.
So it's our annual Halloween special. Mm-hmm. We take a different look at the Bond, James Bond phenomenon, and focus
shapes
on
and forms.
It's very. Was it last year that we did Friday the 13th or the year?
No, last year at Jason's suggestion, no less. I think it was the first time he suggested special. Night in Soho, yeah, which was a fun episode, a good movie, good Halloween movie. I think that opened on Halloween weekend.
Yeah, that's why we did it on Halloween, because that movie just opened that weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And this one is, we're going a little bit further back, a lot further back in time, late 50s,
58. I Googled the actress who plays the little girl in the movie is the same age as my dad. She's 74. She's born the same.
Happy birthday, little girl.
I think she's the only person in the cast still alive.
Well, she does survive the movie, so it's good for her. Good for her. Horror of Dracula. So, we'll talk probably a little bit about Hammer, and we've been wanting to do this for some time.
I think that was one of the suggestions. The first time we did an Halloween special, I think you brought it up, and we ended up doing a sort of a mishmash of everything
what a bunch of actors did.
Yeah.
Then we sort of traded off our favorite horror movie franchises. Then we did Last Night in Soho. And now we're sort of doing one of our original ideas, which is because it's a Hammer horror film, mm-hmm. and Hammer horror, which is a Brit. They don't make movies anymore, but it was a British, fairly well respected British film studio, a production company that made not exclusively horror movies, but they're mostly known for the horror.
They're
movies.
Best remembered for horror of a specific genre.
I doubt that they made as many movies as quickly as Shaw Brothers did kung fu flicks, but I sort of likened them to that. It's like in Hong Kong, you had Shaw Brothers doing martial arts. Well, in England, you had Hammer just doing 1,000 Dracula and Frankenstein.
And mummies.
And mummy movies.
And I think they did a Wolfman or two.
I haven't seen any of their Wolfman.
I've seen a few of the Frankenstein films.
I think
and
I saw one.
I remember seeing Dracula with Christopher Lee when I was a very young child, but I mean, those memories I tend to mix those Dracula movies with the one that, what's his face, his wife was murdered by Manson.
I don't know.
What's his name?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
The guy who directed Chinatown.
Oh, yeah. Roman Polanski.
Yeah, he did a vampire movie. I don't remember the title, but I
don't remember.
Yeah, I tend to mix that movie and
the Christopher Lee Dracula movie in my mind because I saw them around the same time.
Okay.
It's fuzzy in my brain.
I do not remember what vampire movie Roman Polanski did.
People
are probably screaming into their his wife
is in there. What's her name? The one that was murdered by Manson, the Manson family. She's actually the leading lady.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know why it's not coming to me. But anyways, you and I, for a few years at least, I mean, if we had talked about this as possibly the first
every time
Halloween
is around the corner, it was like, are we doing a Hammer film?
But that means that, you know, we both have a bit of a history with Hammer. For us to have broached the idea 4 years ago when we did our first ever Halloween special, it means at that time we were already familiar with Hammer films. Do we want to start a little bit about like where we're coming at with Hammer? Drop the hammer.
Drop the hammer. You know, I'm mostly familiar with their Frankenstein films. Back in 2006, I was living in Rimouski. I think I told you about that. Mm-hmm. I lived there for like about 6 months. And I decided instead of getting the internet, I'm getting cable. And among the cable channels, there was it's now defunct. It was called Scream. It became Dusk. Now it's something else. Okay. But they were airing horror movies. And they had a bunch of, especially during Halloween, was great, man. They aired all the classic Hammer, all the Universal Monster. That's where I was first introduced to, especially Universal. The Universal Monster, especially the Frankenstein ones, left stronger memory in my mind. I think they're
quite striking.
I think they're better movies. But the Frankenstein movies, especially the ones I see, I didn't see any. They weren't playing any Dracula movies, but the Frankenstein movies were really weird because usually in any adaptation, the monster is the monster, and Frankenstein tries to destroy his creation. Where in those movies, Frankenstein is the monster, and the monster is just a pawn in sort of the drama. Yeah. And he's a rapist. He's a murderer. He's a pretty rotten person, and he's played by Peter Cushing. Yeah. Cushing or Cushing?
I think it's Cushing.
Cushing, who's most, you know, most of people now know him for being Grand Moff Tarkin in Star Wars Rogue One.
Oh my God. You went there. Anyway, sure, I'm going to pretend you didn't say that. But
I had to. I remember them for the look of their film. They have usually, especially when they film outside, which unfortunately for the horror of Frankenstein, it's set bound, so you don't go outside that much.
Very little. Anyway,
Very little. But there's always a foggy atmosphere. They love the fog machine also for the interior set. I remember around the time that I still had cable and I was watching Scream, that became Dusk, that became something else. They also aired a documentary that was, it gets mostly like a sort of a director commentary, and it's Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing talking about their experience making those films.
Interesting.
And it's very interesting. I could barely remember, but I remember being very interesting. It was made probably the year that he passed away. I think he passed away in 1994, and that's when they did that sort of look back at their career making horror films, the both of them. And you know, they apparently they were big buddies, and I find it amusing that they are both in Star Wars at different ages, in their career, and even like they're not in the same, they think they're in the same frame for, I think, one or two shots in.
Well, there's the fight at the end. They obviously needed to be in the same set for that scene. But that doesn't, yeah.
I think you can count the number of shots there.
Possibly,
in the same, on the same.
Peter Cushing is mostly looking at a mounting special effect in that final scene anyway. So it's like. Yeah, interesting. It's funny. I'm going to feel a little bit silly now because I asked the question about your history with Hammer, and mine's a little unclear. I don't quite remember.
Even mine's very wrinkled. It's like memories of memories.
But you know that you, in 2006, you signed up for Scream, which then became Dusk, which then became something yeah. else, and you discovered
I Googled that because I couldn't tell you that. I wasn't even sure the name of the station, but yeah.
Whereas for me, the only thing I can remember is... In my much younger days, this is not particularly recent, but in my younger days when I was much more interested in Star Wars than I am now, and today I'm very sort of like take it or leave it, but I did like Star Wars quite a bit when I was like a kid and a young teenager, and I did like that character in Rogue One, and and when I sort of read up on that actor, because I was always arrested by that performance, he sort of looks interesting. It's one of those things where you don't want to be impolite. I don't want to be impolite, and rest in peace, Peter Cushing, but he has an interesting look.
A very angular face.
Yeah, the cheekbones are interesting. And so when I found out that he's mostly known for playing in a bunch of like British horror movies, and that's what eventually led me to Hammer, and when I got back into, listeners can go back to literally the first episode of this podcast, when I went back to Bond in 2006 with the release of Casino Royale, I obviously, you know, bought the DVDs and rewatched Man with the Golden Gun and was reminded of how great, Saruman is in that movie, and kind of like when I used to really like Star Wars and I discovered that Peter Cushing was really mostly known for these other things. 2006, Casino Royale comes back out. I rewatch Man with the Golden Gun. I do my research. Well, actually, Scaramanga is mostly known for these other things. And hey, that's what the guy in Star Wars is known for. And that's sort of what, you know, led me eventually to slowly but surely discovering.
Okay, that you really went all. It's really all over the place. Your association with Hammer. It's convoluted. All leads.
Look, as we say in my country, all roads lead to Transylvania, and my castle in particular. So slowly but surely, and you know, I eventually grew into an aficionado of film history, and I still am to this day. And I have, you mentioned, you know, this one, the Count of Dracula, the horror of Dracula is particularly set bound. It's particularly studio bound, with not that many. What's the term when it's not on a set? on location. Yeah. On location. Exteriors. On locations. You know, this movie, I've seen a couple of the Dracula sequels. I have seen the Frankenstein. I have seen Rapist Frankenstein. I've seen The Phantom of the Opera. I've seen a freaking weird one where Peter Cushing is sort of like a wannabe Indiana Jones, and he comes back to England with the skeleton of something from Egypt, and like someone bleeds on it. It's a little Hellraiser-ish. Someone bleeds on it, and like its flesh slowly starts. It's a freaking awesome movie. And so yeah, it took a while. It took a while.
I think you've seen more than I did. Mine, I. Like, I don't know if I even finished all of the movies that I started watching.
You don't finish movies.
It depends, but yeah.
The horror of Dracula is particularly set bound because, and I'll let you give your point of view about this. I'm dying to hear it. But I love these sets. I love what the craftspeople who worked for Hammer did back in the day, and the attention to detail, and sometimes it actually looks a lot more plain than what set designers would do these days, but there's still enough character, strange angles. It's interesting, and I think the horror of Dracula is one of the highlights of, you know, they made hundreds of movies, but I would consider the horror of Dracula to be one of the highlights of what they've done.
You know, I would, it would be interesting to revisit all of their films, because I'm pretty sure they probably recycle sets or props all the time. You would do so if you're trying to save some money. But the sets were like pretty impressive. Mm. It's like the interiors were gorgeous, well decorated. There's a lot of props and little details. There's a sort of phonograph that Peter Cushing uses at one point. There are things that are probably anachronistic with technologically wise, but it's sort of its own bubble world there. I don't know what it's supposed to happen, but whatever. I
you bring up that moment with the gramophone, and that moment, especially when the porter walks in, that reminded me, because I hadn't seen a Hammer in a little while. That the horror was the first one I've seen in a few years. That moment reminded me how clever these screenwriters got sometimes. The porter comes in and he's sort of looking around. "Oi, sir, could have sworn I heard you talking to someone." I was talking to myself. It's because he was listening to his pre-recording on a gramophone, but we're in like the late or mid 18th century.
Whatever.
18th century, excuse me. 19th century.
1917.
And so like this guy has no idea what a gramophone is. So to him, it's like, it's
sorcery.
Yeah, it's sort of the screenwriters thought about a moment to go like, look, it's like 1880, whatever. Nobody knows what a gramophone is. Of course,
it gives you a Van way Helsing to would. Create exposition.
Yeah. And it does that as well. But it does so in sort of in a wink and a nod to the audience of, you know, look at this awesome technology. Like, it's... You know, Van Helsing is using this. I'm holding up my Android.
It's using a cell phone in 18. Like it's whoa! It's brand new tech. Can't wait to listen to my albums of music. What's an album of music? You'll find out in a few years.
No, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. And there's speaking about the script. This one has a little bit of fun with Bram Stoker's tale.
I have never read Dracula, but have you read it?
I have, but it's a long time ago.
Yeah, I know that it's mostly journals, and mm-hmm. I know that the version that Coppola did about 30 years ago now is apparently the most accurate portrayal of... Because usually they condense character, they fuse characters together when they adapt that story, mm-hmm. and they emulate some of the plot elements. Because I see echoes of that movie in The Horror of Dracula, but it's sort of condensed, simplified. There's less locations, it's less characters. It's sort of the TV version of of the 1892 movie. I say that it sounds derogative, but it's more, it's economical, an economical movie, mm-hmm. where the 90s version is very lavish, big.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually rewatched, I checked out some clips of Bram Stoker's, and yeah, it's freaking awesome.
I love that movie.
It's great. Unfortunately, nobody who plays any James Bond characters is in that movie, but... You know, right from the outset, when Jonathan shows up, and you're like, okay, he's going to sell him some land. But then Jonathan's shown to his room, and he writes in his little diary.
Like, I was surprised by
that. I'm here to kill this mofo. I'm like, ooh.
Oh, that's different.
That's not in the book. So there's almost a twist, and then another twist, and then another twist. Like, Jonathan doesn't last very long. His wife doesn't last very long. By the way, this is also a Gotham City detour. when that guy showed up, I was like, I know that voice.
I know that face.
So it's this is...
That's what he looked like when Michael Keaton was 12 years old and his parents got gunned down. My thought. I was like, oh, that's what Alfred looked like when he raised Bruce Wayne.
I like it. We'll go with it. Yeah, this is not a faithful adaptation of
But you know what? It's kind of like what they did in those days. It's until maybe in the last 20 years where people get super... They don't adapt books anymore. They translate them, mm-hmm. to the detriments, mm-hmm. of the medium of movies. I've reread...
Are you saying you don't like the 4-hour-long version of Return of the King?
Oh, no. You know what? Even that was adapted. I'm thinking more about something like... I'm thinking about the sequel, Da Vinci Code. I actually enjoyed the book. I thought it was. Some people hate the book, and when you think about it, it's kind of stupid. But when you're reading the book, it's the way it's written. It puts you in the thinking process of the character, so it's interesting because you're inside the character's mind. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't translate to film at all. It's a very boring movie. Now, the book was entertaining. I didn't think about it. When after the fact, I was like, man, that's kind of stupid. The Hour of Dracula, I would say, fits in that type of adaptation where they change things, they compile elements, and they make, and it's, you know what, technically it's not called Dracula, it's called the Horror of Dracula. So they can do whatever the hell they want. Not a pure adaptation of Bram Stoker. Some people say Stroker, which
there's an X-rated joke in there somewhere, but I don't need to edit more than needs to be.
Yeah, just
minimum effort. You know when Deadpool says maximum effort, me it's minimum effort. But it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up the film's title again, because you know I hadn't seen this one. I think a few minutes ago I said I saw this one for the first time. I lied. I had seen this one a few years ago. It was a rewatch, but one of those. Felt like I'm watching it for the first time type of a thing, or seeing it again for the first time because it had been a while. The title, The Horror of Dracula, I thought it was an interesting title. I'm like, oh, they're just trying to be like, oh, we don't know what to do, and we can't call it Dracula because it's not a faithful adaptation, and there are 1,000 movies, even in the 50s, there are 1,000 movies called Dracula. We'll just call it Horror Dracula. But then I watched the film. And as the story and all these plot twists, like, oh, actually, Jonathan Parker knows he's a vampire and he's here to kill him. And, you know, and that doesn't turn out well. The title actually started to make perfect sense. Because let's face it, Dracula, as played by Francisco Scaramanga, is not in the movie that much. The film, from my point of view, is about The Horror of Dracula.
That's actually a fairly good interpretation.
Happy accident, and they really didn't know what the F to call this movie.
No, or it was called The Horror of Dracula for copyright reason in the States, and actually in England it was just called Dracula. But I like your reasoning better. They should that actually makes a lot of sense because it's focusing more on the effects.
The effects
of Dracula's presence.
The town folk are fearful of him. So Jonathan shows up. Jonathan gets up. That affects. They change her name in this. What's her name?
Oh, it's Mina and Lucy. I think they inverted Lucy, something like the that. Names.
Mina, Milucy. Milucy's is then affected with the effects. Then Batman's butler is affected with the effects. Batman butler's wife, it's just this freaking snowball effect of all the bad things that Dracula, the existence of Dracula causes.
I was thinking while watching the movie, because Dracula and vampirism, it could be used to talk about multiple things. Sometimes it's, you know, they talk, it's about sexual revolution. Sometimes it can be about drugs. Vampires are always looking for the next fix. And the entire time I was looking, I picked up on some elements, because Van Helsing is obviously a man of science, but he uses religious artifacts, and he uses the cross to beat Dracula by the end of the movie. And Dracula is sort of libido incarnate. He wants to bang a bunch of ladies. At the same time, he's afraid of, you know, there are so many elements, and I was trying to see if there was a correlation with drug use, because the way they portray the effects of vampirism, it looks like somebody is going through withdrawal. Especially, I think it's, I don't remember if it's Mina or Lucy, because they inverted the names, and I don't even know, but she's in bed, and they put flowers next to her bed. It looked like something.
The garlic plants.
Yeah, yeah. Going on in withdrawal. And I was like, oh. And there were a lot of things that, you know, And I was thinking also in the 60s, religion, was it as pervasive as it was maybe in the 40s? Because I remember my grandmother telling me stories about the local priest coming around the bend and knocking at her door and, you have children. Mm-hmm. Are you pregnant, basically, mm-hmm. right now? Mm-hmm. And she was like, what the hell are mm-hmm. you talking about? Mind your own business.
That's why I think that's one of the things that eventually gave birth to La Révolution.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering if they had the same thing in England around the time. Because what's the horror? Because it's not, you know, it's not a particularly scary
for a movie with the title, for a Dracula movie with the word horror in its title, is not very scary.
No, it's not scary, but it's still like we have to talk about Christopher Lee, even though he's the title character, he's not in the movie that much. He is probably my favorite Dracula. Because I've never been a fan of Boris Karloff. It's
Bela Lugosi.
Bela Lugosi. I love Boris Karloff as a Frankenstein.
You don't like Lucy Goosey?
You know what? I think if you could CGI him in the Spanish version of Dracula, you'd have a perfect movie. That the direction in the American, it's a boring movie. Oh God, is it? Is it boring? He's good in the movie, but damn, that direction doesn't help him. It's static. It's mm-hmm. boring. Mm-hmm. When you watch the Spanish version, they move the camera. They do a lot more work, but the actors.
I need to watch the Spanish version.
The Spanish version, even though I don't speak Spanish, I've seen. I don't know if I've seen it completely, but it was on the box. The version that came up about 3 or 4 years ago at mm-hmm. Walmart. It had glow-in-the-dark covers. I got they were pretty cool. I got a bunch of those. I'm much more a fan of the Frankenstein movies of that period. He only did one Dracula movie. There's only one sequel. And there's he's in one of the parodies with
The Abbott and Costello thing. Yeah.
I feel Christopher Lee left a bigger mark on the character, and he's almost like a pervert. He feels very pervy as Dracula. It's the way he just smiles and just silly little things. And I was thinking about, you know, when you cast Dracula in a movie adaptation, I think today they would cast a 20-year-old for Dracula. And I love the fact that it's a little detail, but he has gray hair in his temples. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how you cast Dracula. You have to cast a man that is at the top of his physical form. He's mm-hmm. sort of on the verge of showing a little bit white, getting mm-hmm. a little bit old.
He's lived.
Yeah, he's a
vampire,
he's on,
so he's lived for a freaking long time. But
he's about to be a little bit too mm-hmm. old. He's mm-hmm. about to, he's broaching middle age, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a perfect way to cast Dracula. Like, even though he played Dracula, I think until the 70s, he was playing Dracula. I think there's one of them where I've seen that one with Karen Munro, where the movie starts, he gets killed, and in the 70s, some junkies resurrect him.
Oh, in the 1970s?
Yeah, it's called Dracula 72 or something like that.
I haven't seen that one. You mentioned about the casting of Christopher Lee. He's so tall. We know he's tall. We've seen him in Golden Gun.
He's not white.
No.
And they use costuming to hide that fact and mm-hmm. enhance his presence. Because he mm-hmm. becomes a black ink spot because of that cape. And he's super well lit.
No, I agree, and I don't know how. And I'm not talking about fisticuffs because he looks like okay in those scenes. He was also much younger in the 50s, obviously. I don't know how much of a, you know, did he have the physicality to be a good runner? Did he have the physicality to do a lot of sneaking? I'm wondering, maybe not, but hear me out. I actually really like how most of the time it just cuts and he's like, whoa, shit, how long have you been there? He's just there. I do like that. And we never see the bat, if he even transforms into a bat. Van Helsing seems to think that's... like,
I think in the sequels, he does transform.
So he was wrong.
I remember seeing clips, and I think in one of them,
he just shows up. He's just there. I like that. I thought that was a nice touch, but it made me think about, Christopher Lee, so tall, and he looks a little bit lanky, and it's like, I wonder, did they do that to make Dracula look cool, or did they say, well, geez, these scenes where he's sneaking up on people are just not working. We're going to have to edit around it.
I don't know. There's a shot where he climbs some stairs near the end, and I think he goes like four steps at a time, and he glides. Yeah. He runs those steps, and because of the cape and the presence, he looks like he's gliding. Mm-hmm. And after that, you have little old Peter Cushing just stumping his way to the stairs. I mean, he's going two at a time. He can't climb as fast. And is it to show the elegance of Dracula versus the stumpiness of Van Helsing, or is it to show that one of them is supernatural? I don't know, it kind of looked cool.
It did look good. It did look good. Although I will say this much. I mean, vampires supposedly have extra... Why would they have extra strength? I don't know. But apparently they have extra strength. And, Christopher Lee looks like he's a heck of a lot more healthy and ready to fight than Van Helsing. Like, I know Van Helsing needs to win that contest ultimately, because otherwise, you need to put a happy spin on the ending. But I'm like, Christopher Lee should be knocking this guy. This is not right.
He's twice as tall.
Yeah.
Twice as fast.
Yeah.
It's no contest. One is actually played by a World War II vet, and the other one is Peter Cushing.
Yeah. Yeah, but interesting that Christopher Lee doesn't put on any sort of accent. For a man who's a polyglot,
he
doesn't put on any, I don't know how many languages he spoke, but a lot.
You know what? I'm guessing he didn't want to be compared to Bela Lugosi, because that was the Dracula at the time.
Mm.
So I'm guessing that's in the actor's choice. And I'm thinking about the other ones. Gary Oldman does an accent, if I remember correctly.
I think Gary Oldman plays like 10 Draculas in one Dracula movie. He plays old Dracula. He plays Vlad. He plays a dog.
Because I want to talk about Dracula and how he turns into ash at the end of the movie. But love it's subtle, but they leave sort of a hint of a sequel, or it leaves, because there's like
the ring.
The ring. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's how he comes back for the sequels.
I don't know. I will say this. It's funny on these Hammer, and not just Hammer, but since we're talking about Hammer, the Frankenstein. Rapist Frankenstein. My horror Indiana Jones movie with Peter Cushing as old English Indiana Jones. The titles and the posters promise that you're going to see the craziest things. The crazy stuff usually happens at the end of the movie, but it's usually worth it.
Oh, yeah.
The disintegration of Dracula.
It starts with his leg.
That which is really cool, because his leg is being shown light, and the face and the eye, the face is decomposing, but the eyes are like the last thing that decompose, sort of. Very nice effect. Very, very nice effect. That was very cool to see. Me liking when horror movies put in a little bit of money into their special effects. It's the American werewolf transformation, where you're like, holy for the, shit.
For the time, it was probably, like you said, the American werewolf in London version of a disintegration. We are not in 1998 with Blade throwing vampire garlic and them blowing up or turning into ash when he spikes them. It's a little bit more mundane. And when it's you know what? I love also the way, because, American cinema and British cinema is different when it comes to violence and sex. I think the Americans are a lot more permissive with violence and not with sex. And it's the other way for British. But they found ways, because people get stabbed in the chest rather frequently in that movie. You never see the spike going in the chest directly. You see shadows, and you hear noises, and you see the character's reaction. But I thought it was done in a very classy way.
It is. It's interesting that I'm glad you brought that up. That thing, because we, you know, I think like most people in the West and around the world, we watch a lot of American movies. You and I happen to delve into the past because we sort of like film in general, you know. But when the opportunity presents itself, we like a decent British film as well. And it's interesting that you point that out, and you even gave the example of the what in the world is that thing? It's not a hammer. It's a
spike.
Spike.
That's not that.
I know it's not that.
A steak.
But the example of how, or when actually Jonathan kills someone with a steak too early in the movie before he gets his. But you know, when Jonathan kills someone, when Van Helsing kills someone, it's a little off screen. It's a little left to the imagination. We do cut back to, for example, when Melina gets staked, we see her become like beautiful again. Or when the woman at the start of the movie gets the stake in the heart, well, I guess because she's been living for quite a while, it actually turns out her human form was actually a very old woman. So we see just enough of the effect for it to be horrifying. But, you know, beautiful broads with cleavage, yo, let's go. Let's do this. Let's film this stuff.
I'll say that. I think the sequels get... because I didn't think they were all that great looking. They got, you know, great costuming, but you know, I've seen more attractive women in in film before. But their costuming, they really enhance their anatomy. They really like
personality. Very, a lot of personality.
Yeah, a lot of personality.
But yeah, no, and the costuming is also very good. You spoke about the costuming for Dracula to make the actor appear even more imposing than he already is. A blot of
black ink.
Yeah. And but everybody's wearing smashing costumes. The suit coat that Jonathan's wearing at the beginning when he shows up to the castle, and he's only buttoned at the collar and the rest is open up. I could not stop looking at that thing. Not because it's like, I don't think I'd be able to pull that off, but I couldn't stop looking at that thing. I was like, is that a 50s British style or is that a 19th century?
I think it's...
But that was very interesting. There's just a lot of, whether it is the horror of Dracula or any number of Hammer films, there's just a lot of craftsmanship that goes into the making of these films, and I appreciate that. I'm not saying there's no craftsmanship these days. The people who work on, you know, Avengers Endgame special effects are working their tails off. The argument today is not that there's no craftsmanship in it, but I guess I'm a little bit like you in the sense that it's nice to, you know, that tactile, the tactile
there's quality. There's a physicality to the locations, to the sets, to the props.
Even the melting Dracula, if you were on set and you were working on it, you could put your hand on it,
The sets become actual characters. And if you remember this, the film starts, they're showing gargoyles, they're showing parts of the castle. It creates an atmosphere, and you see the Dracula's coffin, there's blood dropping on it. It's an evocative way, but the camera, the direction is very static. I don't want to go too much into negative, but I don't think you can show that to any audience today and they'll be entertained. I think some people would be very, very bored by this film. Its strength lies in its performance, but I would say also in its atmosphere. And it's just not just the fog machine. It's the set, the decor, the little knickknacks that are on tables, the gramophone, things like that are what makes that movie interesting. There's always something for you to focus your attention on, whether it's a costume, the atmosphere, and the lighting. The lighting is the way the characters are lit, especially when Dracula shows up. He's always framed in backlight, and you can barely see his face.
Very good. Very good.
You know, there's good craftsmanship, and it's not just the props. It's the guys who lit, the guys who do the makeup, the actors, the way they hold their fake teeth, and they kind of create these creepy smiles that are just...
You mentioned the lighting. I want to talk about that for a moment. In the context of this film...
You mean Day for Night?
Day for Night is pretty awesome, but no, I wasn't going to talk about that. Although, although you know what? No, yes, I'm going to include the concept of Day for Night in my little spiel here. And this is not going to be a rant, so listeners, you know, rest easy. I'm not going to get like whiny bitch ass about it. But I was watching The Horror of Dracula, appreciating some good old juicy Day for Night. And I was appreciating the moment when Dracula enters Mamalina's, Lucina's bedroom, and he's lit from below. Like, where would this light be coming from? But it's good, and he's Dracula, so we're going to light him like that. It's scary, you know? That's sort of like a classic horror thing.
Atmospheric.
Yeah, it's the classic atmospheric thing to do. And it's funny, because I was watching that scene, and the Day for Night, and the castle, and even I love how his catacombs are filmed. That's a beautiful set, and that's one. And I was thinking about something I was sent to... I was a professional film critic. I was thinking about something I was sent to this summer. By the time this is released, it's probably going to be on digital. Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. And, you know, the film's perfectly fine. Interesting characters, you know. Sort of a commentary on Gen Z and this and that. But anyways, the point is, you know, something happens. It's a bit of a sort of a comedy thriller. Something happens, and it's a dark and stormy night, because it's always a dark and stormy night, and they're... for reasons X, Y, Z, they can't really leave this very big house. It's not a castle, but it's a very big,
you know, mansion.
Yeah, call it a mansion.
Wayne Manor.
Wayne Manor. They cannot leave Wayne Manor, and Bruce Wayne's line got cut off, so the lights are out. So these girls are stuck in Wayne Manor with no light on a night. And there's sort of a murder mystery going on. And they only have their cell phones. And I thought about Bodies, Bodies, Bodies while watching The Horror of Dracula, not because I don't understand why the director of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies decided to do that. Well, they can't see, and they don't really know this house, and they're young Gen Zers, so of course they're gonna, you know, depend, their lives are gonna depend on their cell phones. I get it, it's fine. I'm not mad. But from a visual perspective, is this a visually interesting... It's a movie. Mm-hmm. What's a movie? A motion picture. A motion picture.
Images presented in a repetitive way that stimulates the movement or whatever.
It's really dark and kind of boring.
Yeah, that's what... it works great for a short film, but I don't know that how long that movie is, but...
Well, that's, 90 minutes or something like that. But... I mean, it's saving grace is that the cast is very game, they're very good actresses, and it's pretty funny. But visually, I got really bored after a while. But I was thinking about that. Like, today you make a movie like Bodies, 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 but in the 50s, it was like, dude, we need to impress this public. Like, yeah, but we need to, I mean, you know.
It's surrealist in a way. It's not the...
I know.
It's not cinema vérité. They're not showing the real world. It's only at something from the 70s that became the norm for Hollywood. But back in the day...
I kind of miss how they how they used to do it.
No, it's today. Any jerk with a cell phone can make a movie. Back in those days, it took a village to make... what's the expression?
A village to screw a light bulb?
I don't know. I like the idea. But it took a lot of people, a lot of hard work and craftsmanship to make a movie where, you know, cinema has been democratized because, I mean, you can make a movie and edit a movie with your cell phone in a matter of hours. Mm. Back in those days, you need to cast, and then you need to write the script, and then you need to set, and then you need the costumes, then you shoot the picture.
We're not saying no one writes scripts or casts actors or designs costumes today. You know, that's, we're not saying that.
But then you need people to light it, and then you're shooting on film. Sometimes it doesn't come out good, so you need to reshoot. And sometimes, the color timing doesn't work, and there's a lot of technical, because they don't shoot on film anymore. That is a lot of difficulties that were linked to them doing something that's analogic, because mm-hmm. that's what film is—an mm-hmm. analogic technology compared to digital, which you mean. And it's great. I appreciate that it's been democratized, but you lost a little bit of mm-hmm. care. I think because you can do it, you know, you can notice while watching the movie where they switch roles. It's really noticeable. Oh, the screen turns black. Hmm. Let's switch roles.
Yeah.
I don't mind it, but it makes it, you have to tell your story in a comical way, mm-hmm. which today, you know, they where creativity solves problems today, it creates problems where there weren't problems anymore. Mm-hmm.
By making it relatively easier to make a movie, making a movie is hard, but by making it relatively, the operative word being relatively, easier to make a movie, it's almost like a whole another set, a whole other row of cans of worms have been opened, right? It's like, well, now they can light it the any way they want, and now they can film it however they want, and now they can. But all that to say that the lighting in horror of Dracula is excellent, whether it's in the catacombs, whether it's in
the castle,
Mama Melina's bedroom, whether it's you know, the outside shots have that. I think you were alluding it to the sort of a foggy, smoky,
a little bit of
blurry quality to them. But
one set I like, it's sort of the exterior of Melina's crypt, where the little girl is comforted by Van Helsing.
I love that.
The actress just walks in there, the smoke machine just pushes. Yeah. Oh, God, I loved it.
It's. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, a smoke machine, it sounds so simple. It
might be a dry ice. I don't know if whatever.
In any event, whichever one machine it is, it's sort of interesting to know that probably just out of frame, there's this machine blowing stuff, you know, into the frame, into the purview of the camera frame. You know, there's sort of a comforting feeling to that. I mean, I'm starting to get a sense that listeners will think that we hate movies today. We don't. I see modern movies, you know, all the time. But it's that nice reminder of how things were done in the olden days. To tie that into the lighting conversation, and once again to Horror of Dracula, is, well, our budget is yay. Our schedule is yay. We only have so much film. And we only have so much our electricity. Our hydro hammer is going to charge us a lot if we waste too much of this stuff. So we need to make every shot a money shot. And I think you can tell. Did it cost $200 million to make? No. But within that 50s British, a little theatrical, you know, you were mentioning it's a little static, you know, within that 1950s British quasi-movie, quasi-theatrical template, it's a really nice-looking movie.
You know what? The staging and, you know, so the framing of the shots is always, you know, it's top-notch because the camera movements, it's pan left mm-hmm. to right to left. That's mm-hmm. about as much as the camera. Mm-hmm. There are some shots that I'm like, I think they had a rail, but that's pretty much what they do. But the staging makes it so that the actors can, you know, the stage direction, they run towards the camera, one of them mm-hmm. is back or whatever. You still create a sense of movement, honestly, but shots last, you know where you are. It's easy to follow.
Yeah.
You know, it's basic directing, but before you start doing cutting left to right, right to left, and doing all these close-ups, insert shots, mm-hmm. you need to master the basic. That's why there's film school.
But no, I see your point. And yeah, the mise en staging is excellent. I think back to it almost seems like the least impressive thing the movie does. But if we're just talking about staging, is it's early in the movie when Jonathan shows up, but Dracula has not returned yet. And well, there's someone else in the house with Jonathan. He doesn't know it yet. And I think he a plate. He's having supper, mm-hmm. but a plate falls down. And he crouches down to pick up his mess. And there's no cut. It's Jonathan on his knees picking up the mess. And he notices there's someone behind him. And the camera sort of just like zooms out a little bit and just pans up a little bit. And there's the lady who Jonathan will kill later on. But
the bride.
Yeah, the bride. It's very simple. But it sort of gets that idea across. And that idea of... you know, I'm just going to pick up my mess. And all of a sudden, you know, when you just know, is someone behind me right now?
you can feel the
audience. Yeah, you can feel it. So that's, it's simple but effective. You know, it got its point across. Whereas, yeah, I mean, today, again, well, enough bad-mouthing modern movies. I like modern cinema a lot.
You know, just compare and contrast. But there's a, you know, there's a, you know, not very original. It's not edited in a very dynamic way, but it is shot in a very efficient mm-hmm. and comprehensive way. It's, you know, it's filmmaking 101.
Yeah.
And some people today, they make films and they don't master filmmaking 101, and it shows. That's mm-hmm. my point about if you compare and contrast. And some of them, the masters can shoot a movie and every shot is sacred, and he can tell a compelling story. And you know, not every story needs to be. And it's a svelte 88 minute, I think.
That's pretty quick.
It's not even an hour and a half. It is a it's a book that has been told. I think the Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, the movie 1992 is like over, it's 2 hours and some change
little,
long.
I think it's a little more than 2 hours, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's a little more than 2 hours.
It's almost the same story, but one of them, the really like cut the fat, you know.
Gave characters completely new roles. Apparently Jonathan is like a pupil of Van Helsing. It's like, okay.
Yeah, but you know, they found a way to tell the story. And you know, even Dracula from 1932 is not very accurate.
No.
It's I mean, I think Nosferatu is probably better.
I've heard it's, again, I haven't read Dracula in so long, but I saw last summer, the summer 2021, Cinéma du Parc had a Werner Herzog retrospective, and I went to go. I had seen it before, but I hadn't seen it on the big screen. I went to go see Nosferatu at the Cinéma du Parc. That's a freaking weird movie. Like in the 70s in a good version. One, yeah, the 70s version with Klaus Kinski as.
I can't do the voice.
It's really weird. Yeah, I only have one last thing to say. I want to suck your blood, of course. Oh. What did you think about the to suck?
My big toe.
I am a bit of a... I do have a bit of a foot fetish.
It's called my Danny DeVito.
Ooh, monsieur des blagues. Monsieur des jeux de mots cet après-midi.
I am full of puns.
You know what really surprised me about the Horror of Dracula, though, was the scene where when Jonathan is talking with Van Helsing, and you know, Dracula has sort of been sucking off a lot of people, and Jonathan's like, you know, where's Dracula? Yeah, that's his name, right? Dracula, where's the Count? And Van Helsing says, he's everywhere.
I almost I was expecting a Batman joke, but sure, we have people everywhere.
Well, yeah. Well, why would I don't need to quote the other scene when Christopher Lee shows up and goes, "I'm Dracula."
Do you know who I am? I'm the goddamn Dracula.
Or the scene when Michael Michael Goh turns to Peter Cushing and says, "Your gramophone, sir."
"I saw the signal, sir."
"Will you be taking the couch tonight, sir?" But we do have people everywhere, just like Dracula is.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. Let's go with that.
We're on Facebook. Search for the James Bond Complex. We're on Instagram, which is at the James Bond Complex. Jason's doing most of the heavy lifting on Instagram. There is a YouTube channel, although, you know, summer break and all, it hasn't been very active. But search for the James Bond Complex. Subscribe and tickle us with the thumbs up button. Hoo-hoo! But if you're a little old school like me, and you mostly just like... dulcet tones speaking in your coming in your ears. There's Anchor.fm, Balado Diffusion Québec, Spotify. What's your team? Your team Google?
Google Podcast.
And I'm a healthy person.
Actually, you know what? I'm a Spotify guy.
You're a Spotify guy.
I don't even use Google Podcasts.
Interesting. I hadn't pinned you as a traitor. Interesting. I'm a healthy person. I'm an adept of the philosophy of the falafel that says an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Just as a clove of garlic keeps Dracula away from... A clove of garlic makes sure Dracula's a prick. I don't know, it doesn't really rhyme, but Apple Podcast. That the point is, search for the James Bond Complex on Apple, subscribe, write a review, and leave us a 5-star glowing golden gun review. We really do think you're going to sink your teeth into this episode.
We hope we set the mood for Halloween, because this is released a little bit before the holiday.
True, this is true. This is not conjecture, this is true. This is accurate information.
So, if you're looking for a moody, atmospheric British horror from the 1950s, you could do worse than to watch the Dracula horror of 1958.
Did you say macabre?
No.
So,
just as I have absolutely no doubt Dracula will return in a comic, in a game, on Netflix. I think there was a Netflix recently at our local theater. He coming back, don't worry.
He never left.
But also, little known art house indie character, James Bond, always returns. so too will the James Bond Complex in about 12 months with another Halloween special, but next week with, I don't know, I don't got the calendar in front of me.
Something else.
Something, maybe, probably James Bond themed.
Something that has to do with 007.
It is in the name of the show, so it's probably going to be a James Bond-centric episode. On that note, see you next Halloween.
This letter delivered first thing in the morning. Will you see to that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Anything the matter? What is it?
Well, sir, to tell you the truth, when I was outside, I thought I heard you talking to someone.
Well, of course you did. I was talking to myself.